Glory to Jesus Christ! Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish presents Light of the East, a program revealing how the Eastern Catholic Churches have nourished the Roman Catholic Churches and today's world in profound ways through their histories, traditions, mysteries, and spirituality. Hello, I am Father Thomas J. Loya, pastor of Annunciation of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois, and this is a story of the Eastern Churches, an inspiring story of faith, courage, intrigue, mystery, spirituality, dissension, and reconciliation. But most of all, this is an expression of a great experience of faith through our unique divine liturgy. Join with me now as we look toward the Light of the East.
Light of the East is also underwritten by a grant from the charitable Koch Foundation, whose vision is to strengthen and propagate the Catholic faith by providing grant support for a wide variety of evangelization efforts. Learn more at KochFoundation.org. Koch spelled K-O-C-H. And Light of the East is also supported by Eastern Christian Publications, where you can find the prayers of the Catholic Byzantine Daily Office at ecpubs.com and easternchristianmedia.com. A broadband network. For you to learn more about the Eastern Catholic Churches, that's easternchristianpublications.com.
Glory to Jesus Christ. Welcome to Light of the East. I am Father Thomas Loya, your host. This program is dedicated to portraying the gifts of the whole church, East and West, the two lungs of the church, as St. John Paul II said, but primarily we present the gifts of the Eastern Churches. But the gifts of the Eastern Churches has also been mentioned and pointed out by the last several popes. Pope St. John Paul II wrote an entire document called Orientale Lumen, which means Light of the East. That, of course, is where we get the name of our program here. And most recently, Pope Leo XIV, one of the first things he did when he became pope, was to meet with the Eastern Catholic bishops, the leaders of the Eastern Catholic churches. And one of the things he said was that the Eastern churches have so much to offer, so much in terms of their gifts. In fact, he said, the Eastern churches are like medicine for the church and for the world. Well, it's time to take some of that medicine, or at least to offer it to you. I believe that the Eastern Catholic churches might be able to be helpful in regard to our brothers and sisters in the Western lung of the church, who are swinging between poles right now. I call it bipolar, not in terms of a mental disorder, but in terms of swinging between opposites. You know what I mean. It's the SSPX versus the Pope, a recent event. Novus Ordo versus traditional Latin Mass. Social justice sin versus personal sin. Traditionalist Catholics versus progressive Catholics. This is the type of thing I mean. And that needs to be healed. That's not a good thing. It's, of course, causing division in the church, and it does not need to be. But first, why is it happening? Whenever we have something that is wrong, or, for example, our sins, and this is what I tell people oftentimes in confession and spiritual direction, walk back your sin. In other words, walk back what is wrong. Walk it back, keep walking it back, per se, and come to what is actually its origin in something good. So the something good of the Western Church is its great gift for rational, logical thinking, for great orderly, kind of linear thinking and presentation of the faith. You had such giants such as St. Thomas Aquinas and so on. You had the Catholic Catechism. You have clear teachings on moral issues like no other source on earth. It lies in the Western lung of the church. And one of the many reasons I feel very privileged, and wouldn't change it for anything, to be a Byzantine Catholic and Eastern Catholic, yet in full communion with the Pope of Rome. Because I value the genius of the Western Church, especially as a pastor, because I can help people to understand very clearly not just what is right and wrong in their mortal life, but why it is. And this is something that I find to be the genius of the Western Church. However, as I mentioned, our genius is also kind of like, well, it could be, in a sense, our weakness. In other words, our crown could also be our cross. That seems to be the case with all gifts. So we have to know that and be careful of that, which means that our crowns, our gifts, cannot just stand completely alone. They need a tempering from sometimes the complementary source. That's how it is in the church. The West needs its gifts tempered, or perhaps I might say fulfilled or enlarged by the gifts of the East, and vice versa. Oh, how we know in the East how helpful the West has been to us in many ways. Popes intervening in things and so on. So it's time now for the East to offer its gifts to the West, because part of the genius of the West is actually causing some of its own problems right now. The West, because of its genius for rational thinking, has a bit of a difficulty thinking in both and terms. When we think rationally, you know, that part of our brain, that left part of our brain, which is the rational part, it tends to think in terms of either or. Something is either this or it's that. It can't be both things at one time. That part of the brain can't imagine that. But the fact of the matter is, life, truth, especially God and God's truth, lies in the both and, meaning where two complementary things, almost like two rivers, converge. And we sort of swim in the convergence of those two rivers. Now, this shouldn't be strange to you, because we see it in what is the source and summit of our existence, the Eucharist. The Eucharist is a physical substance. It is bread and wine. Yet at the same time, it is something supernatural. It is the actual, real presence of the body and blood of Jesus Christ. Now, how can that be? How can something be invisibly real to us and at the same time fleshy or natural to us? Substance. We have what is visible and invisible converging. Yet we believe that, don't we? Or we should. It is the real presence. It's not just a symbol. It's not just bread and wine. It's not just an invisible God sort of magically appearing to us. It is the invisible God become visible, enfleshed in the bread and the wine. It's the same thing with the very nature of Jesus Christ. He is God and man, not either or. The Holy Trinity is three distinct persons, yet one God. You see how it works? We live in the both and, complementary factors or concepts or realities that converge, and we live in them. And most of the time, we cannot understand them fully because they're a mystery. That's what mystery is. Mystery is something revealed and something hidden at the same time. So what we're going to offer from the Eastern churches for the West, especially during this crisis in the West, and there's crisis in the church, East and West, all the time, from time to time, just a matter of degrees. So we have to help each other out. What we're going to offer from the East is what I believe is the singular genius of the Eastern Catholic churches, and that is living in the both and, where we can have this and that all at the same time. Now, why do I think the Eastern churches can offer something in this regard? Well, first of all, because we live in the both and. That's so much of our spirituality. We love mystery. But also, let's get into something more concrete. In the history of the Eastern churches, they're developed monasticism, which of course we even have today, developed in the Eastern churches, especially in the deserts of Egypt. And these were lay people. It was a lay movement who were disenchanted with some of the institutional aspect of the church. The institutional aspect is, of course, is a necessary component, you know, the authority, and some of the corruption, and some of what they thought was not authentic Christian living. So they went off to the deserts, and they developed their own, in a sense, right, their own rituals, their own prayer, their own sense of liturgy and of asceticism, mysticism, and so on. Well, this became a source of consternation to the institutional church at the time, you know, in other words, to the authority, the bishops. And there was tension there, even condemnation of the monks. But what eventually happened was, lo and behold, the Eastern churches began to make their bishops from these monastics, because in time they began to understand each other better, where you need the institutional part of the church. You have to, well, as it were, sometimes put up with it. You need that. But you also need the charismatic or the pious or the spiritual prophetic aspect of the church. And that's what monasticism was. They were very prophetic in their witness of authentic Christianity, authentic Christian living. You have to have both. And we live where the two of them converge. Whether we like one or the other better or not, we live in that confluence. And what's happening here in the Western Church, as I observe it as an Eastern Catholic, is that there's a problem living in the both and. That's why we have these dichotomies, these bipolar tensions. It now is, of course, the one that's very front and center is the SXPX, or the people who want a traditional Latin mass in the Western Church, and those who are part of the Vatican, the authority of the Church, and also who promote the Novus Ordo as the standard. And there seems to be a great chasm here. It seemed to be beginning to heal a bit over some time recently, but now it's a large chasm, especially because of the excommunication that happened because of the SSPX ordaining bishops against the will of the Pope. So what has to happen here to bring them more together? We invite them to think more in the both end, that that is possible. And the reason I know it's possible in the West is because Pope Benedict XVI was on the road to making that happen, remember? He produced what was called a motu proprio. That is a document in which he said that those who want to attend and priests that want to celebrate the traditional Latin Mass may do so. He did not abrogate the Novus Ordo. He didn't replace it with the traditional Latin Mass, nor did he ban the traditional Latin Mass. He made an effort that would move things towards the both and that the Church could be okay with that. And whichever way that went, maybe the Latin Mass would become the norm, maybe perhaps modified in some way, or maybe eventually the Novus Ordo would remain the norm. He didn't know which way it would go, but he allowed for both. And that started to be a very good solution to this chasm, this dichotomy. Now that has been abrogated, and we're back to the dichotomy again. You see, in the Eastern churches, we actually have, for example, in my rite, the Byzantine rite of the Catholic Church, we have three different liturgies. Now, two of them are not vastly different, but they are different with different names. St. John Chrysostom, the liturgy of St. Basil the Great, and the third one, which is the most different, the pre-sanctified liturgy, which we do only during the Lenten season. So you can have actually in the history of the church, and even now, especially in the Eastern churches, you can have more than one form of liturgy. And liturgies do, in fact, develop over time. They do change, maybe not, and they shouldn't change intrinsically, but they do change in certain forms. When we come back, we're going to talk more about what the Eastern churches can offer in this great tension between the traditionalists and the progressives, between SSPX and the Pope and so on, in the Western lung of the Church. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
Every day, Father Loya posts a brief 2-minute Facebook video on the Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish homepage. You'll be amazed at what you can learn just by watching. Light of the East mission is Christianity's reunion and to tell the story of the Eastern lung of the Catholic Church. We need your support. In order to keep Light of the East on the air, you can make a donation now by going to ByzantineCatholic.com. That's ByzantineCatholic.com. And then donate securely using any major credit card. With your help, we can keep Light of the East's illumination bright. Every weekday morning, including Saturdays, on Facebook, Father Loya talks about everyday issues through the perspective of Byzantine Catholicism. For example,
we've been talking for the last several days about how divided we are as a nation, marriages, nations within America and so on. Such a divided country. And we said because one of the reasons is we've forgotten how to communicate and communicate as persons.
Then, on Wednesdays, Father Tom's alter ego, Southside Joe, gives his everyman Southside Chicago Byzantine Catholic perspective on what may be concerning you.
Hey, it's Wednesday. You know what that means? I get to get my 2 cents in. Whether you like it or not. You know, the priest's been talking about communication, especially about getting the message. Make sure you get the message from the person. Check in with them. Make sure you got it right.
Visit the Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish Facebook homepage every morning for just another way to think about things.
You know, I love being a Byzantine Catholic.
I'm Joe Murphy from Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and you're listening to Light of the East.
You are listening to the Choirs of Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, under the direction of Timothy Woods in Homer Glen, Illinois. This is the music you hear on Light of the East and is sung during the sacred liturgy at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish. Order online at ByzantineCatholic.com. All we ask is a donation of $20 or more, which includes shipping and handling, to Annunciation Parish for each Theosis CD. Send a check made out to Annunciation Parish at 14610 Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. And may God grant you.
Welcome back to Light of the East. I'm Father Thomas Loya, trying to offer some of what Pope Leo XIV calls the medicine that the Eastern churches are for the whole church and for the world. How about that? So I'm offering the medicine to heal. Medicine is offered to heal the chasm, this bipolar swing that's happening in the Western lung of the church. As I mentioned, it's going to take some humility and honesty on both parts of the bipolar spectrum. I'll sum it up by saying those who are more so-called progressive, Novus Ordo and so on, and those who are more traditional, especially the SSPX. And your humility is going to be where they both have to realize and admit that they both have something to offer, and that they both have, in a sense, maybe not intentionally, but caused some hurt or consternation among the, as Pope Francis would call them, the sheep. We have to be honest here, because when you want to heal, you have to be honest about the hurts, first of all. You have to name them and improve upon them, be sorry for them, ask for forgiveness. And again, not intentionally. On the side of the Vatican, for example, there has been a lot of ambiguity, a lot of confusion recently, especially in the last two popes, as to what really we are to believe and practice in the church. And that confusion has come across in a kind of a form of almost authoritarianism, such as you saw right here in the case of the SSPX being excommunicated. Now, there, of course, was a justification for this excommunication in part, and also, if you want to call it a schism, because the SSPX, what they did was they went through with ordinations of bishops against the will of the Pope. Now, on that note, he was kind of backed into a corner. He had to act in that way. But that wasn't the end of the story. He has even offered them a way back. And it wasn't his intention to excommunicate anybody, whoever had anything to do with the SSPX or went to a Latin Mass and so on. Nonetheless, it came off to the rank and file, to the sheep, in a kind of a frightening and confusing way. And also, the nature of the canonical nature of how this decree was presented has given a lot of canon lawyers a kind of a bit of a head-scratching kind of reaction. It seems to have been rather complicated, which again contributes to confusion and therefore anxiety among the sheep. Now, this may not have been intentional, but it did happen. And so I would suggest, as an Eastern Catholic, speaking very objectively and fraternally, that maybe the Vatican could apologize for whatever consternation was caused, even though it is not intentional. And these things happen. On the part of the SSPX, they do need to apologize for a flagrant disobedience of the Pope of Rome. And here's why you can't do that. Even though they justified it by there's a crisis in the church and we have the right way, so canon law says that we can do this. The reason you can't do that is because you open up a real can of worms. That means that the progressives, especially of the ilk of some of the German bishops who promote same-sex marriage and women priests and so on, some of those could actually say the same thing. We have to save the church from its own teachings. It's too conservative. It must open up and be more progressive and have women priests and so on. See, they could do the same thing. So you have to be very, very careful about striking out on your own. You also have to be very, very careful about considering yourself as the magisterium, that you know better than the whole rest of the church, even the Pope. Because who appoints you to that status except yourself? Now we get into something that's very similar to Protestant denominations like Martin Luther. I know better than the Pope, so follow me. And of course, from that, others come too. I know better than Martin Luther, follow me, etc., etc. So you can't do this. And SSPX needs to apologize and do some mea culpa for that. However, they do have some points that are worth noting by the Vatican. That is, and it's very clear, people today, especially the young, they're yearning for what they believe has been lost since the Novus Ordo. Not in every Novus Ordo Mass, but since the Novus Ordo came into practice. And that is a fundamental sense of the sacred. And it's ironic how in the church, we bent over backwards. We did handstands to try to keep the youth in church. So we thought, gee, we have to bring in their kind of music and really relate to them. And the priests would be cool, you know, kind of take off their collars, you know, kind of slide them in a little slot there, kind of have them half on, half off. I remember all that Father so-and-so trying to be cool. Okay, those are all attempts to keep our youth because we thought we were losing them to rock and roll and so on. Well, lo and behold, we have the youth back in the church and they're coming back through traditional worship, especially the traditional Latin Mass. So there's a case in point to be presented to Rome and basically telling Holy Father, you want the youth in the church. Do you see what's bringing them into the church? Can't we reach some kind of both-and situation in the prescribed forms of worship in the church, such as what Pope Benedict XVI was promoting? Now, also, it is possible, and I hear this from my Latin Rite brethren, because I, of course, celebrate the Byzantine Rite, but I'm familiar with the Latin Rite. They'll tell me that they can go to churches that have Novus Ordo Masses done very reverently. I had that experience recently. In fact, I was in Poland, and I experienced a Mass at one of the churches in Poland, beautiful church. It was in Krakow, and it was an absolutely beautiful Mass. It was done Novus Ordo, but it was done with great solemnity, beautiful singers, music. So it can be. In fact, I'll take it a step further. Let's revisit. I encourage my Latin Rite brethren, from the Vatican to SSPX and everything in between, revisit the documents of the Second Vatican Council on the liturgy, especially the liturgy of the worship for the Latin Rite. There was a whole section for the Eastern Rites, but we're talking about the Latin Rite. Revisit those documents, because if those documents, what they said, what they recommended for worship in the Western lung of the church, if those documents were followed according to what they said, you probably would not have this controversy, this chasm, this schism between those who want a more traditional or conservative form of worship and those who want to follow the Novus Ordo or be more progressive. The problem is what happened was after Vatican II, innovations came in that were not called for by Vatican II. This is in the Western lung of the church. So I would suggest revisiting that. I would suggest revisiting the motu proprio, what Pope Benedict XVI was trying to do. I also invite you to, especially in the West, to revisit other aspects of what the Second Vatican Council was trying to do in terms of worship. And that is to have greater participation in worship by the faithful. You see, what was happening, and I am old enough to remember the Latin Mass during the pre-Vatican II era. I, of course, was always Byzantine Catholic all my life, but I was familiar with the Latin Mass. And during the Latin Mass, what would happen is the priest would be at the altar, you know, ad orientem, as he should be, doing the Mass in Latin. The altar servers would be making the responses because they were taught to memorize them. And the laity was oftentimes just kind of detached, sort of doing their own thing. They were maybe praying a rosary or just kind of listening or just maybe using a prayer book, reading the scripture, or just sort of staring off into space. And this is actually a problem. That's not how liturgy is supposed to be. Yes, there was the mystery there, the sacredness, but there was also something else missing. Liturgy means work of the people or public work. In other words, it's really the people, the faithful, who make the liturgy happen, whether East or West. Now, we're not talking about the Eucharist. Of course, the Eucharist is the central mystery there. It's Christ acting in his church. But I'm talking about the worship. The worship is supposed to be participatory. And yes, it was to an extent in the old Latin Mass, but not nearly enough. And it's okay to admit that because, remember, historically, it's another thing we should look at. Look at the history of the church. Historically, the liturgy, the Mass, East and West, all of them, underwent changes. Now, we're not talking about foundational, radical changes. We're talking about adaptations and things that were made according to the times, but did not depart from the essence of the liturgy or the Mass, did not depart from the intrinsic, integrated whole of the Mass. We had that in Eastern churches, too. There's things that were shortened, things that are different now than they were before. There's many parts of the Byzantine liturgy that are remnants of what was done in a much bigger way centuries ago. But they found that over time, as cultures changed, times changed, they kept the essence of those things, but they did them in a different way. So it is not correct to think that we can crystallize the Mass or the liturgy at any one point in history and do it exactly as it was done then, that this is the way, because that doesn't square with the reality, the truth of history in the church. Changes, yes, adaptations, but not departures from the essential aspect and character of the Mass or liturgy. These are just some things I would offer as an Eastern Catholic that might help heal this chasm between so many bipolarisms that are happening in our brothers and sisters in the Western lung of the Church. And we are here to be for each other. So I hope what I have presented here from the Eastern Churches will be helpful. Thanks for listening. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
To hear Light of the East again, visit ByzantineCatholic.com and click on the Resources tab and on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening to Light of the East. We encourage you to tell a friend about Light of the East and to visit ByzantineCatholic.com. Light of the East is produced by ADC Media.
Thank you for listening. Next week, we will return to the Light of the East. To learn more about Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish, visit our website, ByzantineCatholic.com, where you will also find an archive of all of our programs. In order to continue Light of the East with its mission of Christianity's reunion, we need your support with a donation. Any amount will be a blessing. Please make out a check to Light of the East Radio and send it to Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. That's Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, spelled Will-Cook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Or donate online on the homepage of ByzantineCatholic.com. From the Light of the East, a new dawn of unity is in sight. God bless you, go with God, and may God grant you many happy years.